Hey guys, it's Christine. My one-woman show, Surviving the Ride, has been accepted into the White Fire Theater Solo Festival. It's one night only, Saturday, February 16th, at the fantastic White Fire Theater in Sherman Oaks, California. If you're in LA, guys, I really want to see you there. Head over to ChristineBlackburn.com for tickets and stick around after the show for a small reception. I hope you guys can make it. Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, actor Keith Blaney talks about a very memorable 7th birthday in Miami.
It's Miami, so I hide behind a palm tree across the street. Somebody calls the police. Helicopters and sirens and fire trucks and police cars all invade my neighborhood and take over my block. The SWAT team arrives. Soldiers in flak jackets and uniforms with rifles and walkie-talkies all take up strategic positions on my block.
Today on the show, actor and master storyteller Keith Blaney talks all about his 7th birthday and a SWAT team on his block. Stay close.
Hey, this is Keith Blaney, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. And whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. I hope you guys had a chance to listen to the show last week with comedian Jason Stewart. Jason Stewart, do you know that guy? He's also an actor. Keith.
I don't think I know.
He told a story about Burning Man, going to Burning Man, and I've had about 3 or 4 stories about Burning Man over the years. So, but this one was very different. Very, very different. And it was why he left.
Oh.
So he went and then he left. And it's quite an adventure anyway. Even though he left, it makes it even a funnier
Burning
Man story.
Well, I'm already a little more interested.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
More than why he went.
That's what I mean. In other words, when people just talk about how crazy it is and what you see and the drugs, it's just kind of redundant.
Yeah.
But Jason had a totally different look at it. So you guys go back and listen to that. But not today, because today I am here with storyteller and writer Keith Blaney. And he brings forth the topic, my 7th birthday. And when I think about when I was a kid and the birthdays I had, we always had like a special dinner. My mom always had any meal we wanted, but we never got to have parties.
You see, it's a difficult birthday to a degree. And I always say that, and my friends would really crawl up my rear about it, because it's a big celebratory birthday where you have a party or go to one or hide from it every year. It's New Year's Eve.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Because your birthday is New Year's Eve.
My birthday is New Year's Eve.
Oh,
so it just happened. And
I
so
see.
It's very unique in where you say we had a party. Think about it from the perspective of an adult.
There's always a party.
Everyone's having a party.
That's so interesting. I never
knew
that.
And so in the context of my 7th birthday, you can see the possibilities of things you don't even know are going to happen.
Oh, that's so interesting.
On your birthday.
I don't think I ever met anybody born December 31st. I'm a week later, January 7th.
Oh, let's see. My dad was January 6th.
Yeah.
6th. I have 2 friends, brother and sister of 3, and 2 of the 3 are December 31st.
Oh,
so
no kidding.
I always contact
interesting
the guy, because we graduated from college together, theater degree, you know, whatever. We graduated together, so I'm always one of the first texts that come back and forth on the morning of is Ian and I. We're like,
oh, that's sweet.
You know, and then
sweet.
Actually, I show him a sock puppet that he used to love, that we used to go crazy, and I used to make say horrible, foul things, and I always greet him.
Yeah, dirty puppets are always
funny. Oh, my God. It's Snowball. Snowball looks so sweet, and the most horrible things come out of Snowball's mouth, and it's really awesome.
That's always funny.
It's great.
My best friend and I, we share a birthday as well, but I'm talking about when growing up, right? Because I'm from a family of 6. I'm the youngest of 6. Yeah. So we couldn't afford or have any room to have any parties,
as it were. That makes sense.
The family was already there. So there was sort of always a party atmosphere in terms of.
Was there a cake? Did you get a cake?
Yeah. So we had the special dinner and we had cake and ice cream and we got a couple gifts from our parents, which is fine.
That's all I ever wanted.
I'm just saying, like a birthday party, I never had one until I was about 21. Mm. And then I had a big party, and then I had a big one at 40. And a big one at 50, and I think I'm done.
I totally get being done with it. I had a lovely birthday where I went out this year, where I usually, my friends will rip me because I've had some lovely birthdays over the year, but years, I get very particular, mm-hmm. and I'm very almost too observatory of the day. And what I always one of my main observations is everyone is in a hurry,
mm-hmm.
and I want everyone to slow down and have my birthday.
Yeah,
but no one naturally wants to do that. They have eyes on the prize. They want to be making out with someone at midnight, and they want to make sure they have a figure out a way to make it happen. And you know that night just doesn't happen. You know, there's planning, and we got to get dressed, and what are we going to do? And they're going to raise the prices everywhere by like 160%.
Let me tell you what I like to do on New Year's Eve.
Well, because I'm interested what people, because some people have plans, some people hide.
Well, here's what I like to do on New Year's Eve. I like to just stay in, like chill out with my daughter, and I like to get those meal kits. Have you ever done those?
No, I wanted to try. I do a lot of cooking myself, and they seem pretty intriguing.
Yeah, they really are. I've got one right now that I just discovered called Every Plate. They're actually owned by HelloFresh. Mm. Here's the thing. These Every Plate dinners are the cheaper, healthier alternative to takeout or delivery. Do you know what I mean? Because sometimes when I don't have time, I'm not going to just be able... Like, if I don't have time, I just will end up either calling for pizza or taking my daughter down to sushi happy hour. Whereas if you sign on with Every Plate, then this food is already there. It's super fresh and it's waiting for you.
It's just waiting for you in different parts.
Yeah, it's really fun. The recipes, they come together in about 30 minutes. And it's, of course, it's totally faster than a trip to the grocery store. Now, my daughter and I, we had this thing called, the other night, it was called Hotel Butter Steak. And so it was a steak, and then it came with crispy potato rounds and these green beans almondine. And here's the thing. That food was gone.
Well, it sounds like it would be gone.
On my daughter's plate. Yeah, she loved it so much. And here's the thing, guys. When other dinner options cost around $10 a serving, Every Plate is offering 5 chef-designed recipes every week from only $4.99 a serving. Get it? That's like half as much.
That's half as much.
Keith.
Yeah, that's a bargain.
It's a bargain. So Every Plate does the meal planning, the shopping, and prepping for you. It takes the time-consuming guesswork out of cooking. And I need that because I need it to be simple.
Part of the problem with cooking with me is deciding what to cook. And if it's sitting there waiting and fresh, you're more inclined to say, all right, let me throw it in the oven. Let me make some good dinner.
Absolutely. And these meal kits are so well known now. And the thing with Every Plate is it's just a lot cheaper. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's the best part.
And they're good. I mean, that's the bottom line. Mm-hmm. They really are. And here's the thing, you guys. Every Plate is offering 6 free meals across your first 3 weeks and free shipping on your first delivery. Just head over to everyplate.com and enter the promo code STORYWORTHY6. Everyplate.com and enter the promo code STORYWORTHY6. And I'm telling you, Keith, when that first box of food comes to your door, you're going to say, thank you, Christine Blackburn. Thank you, Storyworthy, because this is not only fun to cook, easy to cook, it's very, very tasty.
And it's pretty inexpensive.
Yes, it is. And now listen, let's get back to your 7th birthday party, man. I'm anxious to talk about it. You have worked so much. I'm so impressed by your bio, which I'm going to tell people about in just 1 second. But before we get to Keith and his story, I did want to remind you guys to head over to storyworthypodcast.com and join the mailing list. You know, why not?
Why not, right?
I know. It's kind of fun. I send these cute little emails. They're short. There's pictures. It's fun. It's nice to look at.
Like
something
pictures.
To do.
Pictures are nice.
Me too. Colorful. And don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts. I don't care where you listen to Storyworthy, but subscribe at Apple Podcasts because those are the numbers that for some reason the gods have said are important.
Oh, okay. Noted.
So I'm going to take your phone, Keith. I'm taking your phone. I'm going to subscribe, rate, and review right now. You'll see me.
When I shut my phone back on because I was paranoid about shutting it off.
All right. He's here right now, you guys. Keith Blaney has been acting on stage and screen and television for over 30 years, as well as developing and writing and performing all sorts of projects, including solo performances. Your most recent television appearances, I don't have to tell you.
No, but I love hearing about them.
You've
because
been on,
they're fun.
They are. You've been on Fargo and Future Man and Tim and Eric's Bedtime Stories. And Keith's live show, Fuck Fiction, True Tales of Life and Death in Paradise, won Best Storytelling Show at the 2017 NoHo Fringe Festival. And that ain't nothing.
No. Yeah, it was nice.
And you also gratefully received an Encore Award nod for its run in the 2018 Hollywood Fringe Festival, which I'm also very impressed with.
Yes, yes. We weren't able to do the final Encore performance, but they were very nice to say, you know, hey, you were good enough to get the nod. And we're very grateful to any nod, because nods are nice.
Exactly.
We like a good nod.
Exactly. And, you know, I have my one-woman show going up at the Whitefire Solo Festival.
I'm going to walk there then,
February
because that's
16th. Thank you. It's a Saturday night.
I'll be in my Miami.
That's not good enough.
But
I don't believe you.
That if I get work and stay in town, I'll walk down Ventura
there
and go, everyone go see her show at the Whitefire in Sherman Oaks, right on Ventura.
Thank you.
I know exactly where it is.
And you guys can find Keith over at his website, fuckfiction.com. I'm going to spell it for you because you do it a little tricky. You say FCKFICTION.com. All right, you guys.
Yeah, they won't let you make a website with the word fuck in it at GoDaddy.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can try.
I wonder if you can at Squarespace.
You might. They fought. And you know what? I just went, okay. And and I don't mind it that way.
It's okay.
I feel happier putting it more places.
Sure.
Just because.
Yeah, FCKFICTION.com. All right, you guys. Wherever you are, put your hands together for Keith Blaney.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. It's my birthday again, which means it's New Year's Eve again. Our next door neighbor yells over the fence into our back window, "The crazy guy in the corner's got an elephant gun in his baby's mouth, and he's gonna shoot her, and he's gonna kill her. Come on!" That's what my neighbor says. See, the crazy guy in the corner used to just be the crazy guy on the corner. Now he's been promoted to crazy guy on the corner with an elephant gun in his baby's mouth. I'm 7. I run down the street. You wouldn't think it, but I'm deceptively quick. My parents, however, do not run down the street with me. I don't remember my parents running anywhere with me ever. Neither of them ever really ran anywhere in general. I just turned 7 and I'm flying solo. It's Miami, so I hide behind a palm tree across the street. Somebody calls the police. Helicopters and sirens and fire trucks and police cars all invade my neighborhood and take over my block. The SWAT team arrives. Soldiers in flak jackets and uniforms with rifles and walkie-talkies all take up strategic positions on my block. Militia in the mango trees. Hapless neighbors hunker in the hibiscus. Nobody move. The crazy guy in the corner's got an elephant gun in his baby's mouth. It's my 7th birthday, and we're surrounded. Now the neighbor on the other corner, he has plastic geese in his yard. His windows and doors fly open. Out come the lawn chairs. Out come the food. Doesn't have a good enough view from his above-ground pool. He turns up his television as loud as it can go. He gets comfortable in his front yard. It's a better view. The finger is on the trigger. The gun is in her mouth. The television is on. It's the Washington Redskins versus the Dallas Cowboys. It's the second quarter. It's the playoffs. It's the NFC championship game.
Nobody fire till I give the order.
Plastic Goose Neighbor sits in his front yard and stares across the street at the house in the corner with the crazy guy with the elephant gun in his baby's mouth. Plastic Goose Neighbor arches forward in his folding beach chair while somehow simultaneously, impossibly still stretches backward, trying desperately, listening, trying not to miss one single play of the game. Suddenly a voice from inside Plastic Goose House screams, "Dallas scored!" Plastic Goose Neighbor leaps to his feet. "Suck on that, Redskins, yeah!" Barbecue potato chips and Fresca go all over the lawn. And just like that, like a giant game of tropical freeze tag, everything on my block just stops. Then, suddenly, the crazy guy in the corner with the elephant gun in his baby's mouth walks out of his house without his elephant gun with his hands up. The SWAT team does it. No shots are fired. He gives up. Nobody ever knows what the SWAT team says to the crazy guy in the corner with the elephant gun in his baby's mouth, but whatever they said...
Come on, don't kill a baby. Come on, who kills baby? Why would anyone in any...
It worked. And with the sun disappearing behind the palm tree towers on the street where I lived, everyone applauds a giant thank you and walks home. Maybe the crazy guy in the corner with the elephant gun in his baby's mouth was a giant Dallas fan like Plastic Goose Neighbor. And maybe at halftime, the SWAT team finally told him that Dallas finally scored. And maybe the exciting news that Dallas finally put some fucking points on the board was so exciting and made him so happy that maybe it made him snap so happy that maybe he changed his mind about blowing away his baby daughter with his elephant gun. Maybe. Plastic Goose Neighbor packs up his lawn chair, packs up his chips and his Fresca, cranks his jealousy window shut, and disappears back inside his house. The baby lived. But his Cowboys lost. I certainly hope he got himself a VCR, and eventually upgraded to TiVo and a DVR. Because this shit happens every day. Maybe that's why my parents didn't run down the street with me to see all the crazy that New Year's Eve. Maybe they'd seen it all before. See, the Dallas Cowboys did go on to lose that NFC Championship game to the Washington Redskins 26-3. But don't worry or be sad, anybody. Because the following Sunday, my dad sits me in his lap in the front seat of our car when it's parked in our driveway and lets me honk the horn as much as I want when the Miami Dolphins go on to win Super Bowl VI, beating the Washington Redskins 14-7. Winning every single game that season, making them the only undefeated team in National Football League history, and that's a record they hold till this very day. So if you think about it, everything really was going to be okay after all. I walk home that night, blow out the candles on my cake, and like so many other New Year's Eve/birthdays growing up Floridian, try ever so desperately to try to stay awake till midnight to watch that damn ball drop on TV. And finally do fall asleep that night, that year, dreaming. Dreaming of my birthday. Because for my birthday, I didn't get clowns or balloon animals or pony rides or puppet shows or any other shit like that. For my 7th birthday, I got... SWAT. And how cool is that? Many years later, I asked my next door neighbor if he remembered the crazy guy in the corner with the elephant gun in his baby's mouth. And he said he remembered that the crazy guy went crazy when over his high wooden fence, he saw his one gay neighbor giving a massive blowjob to his other gay neighbor by their above ground pool. And that's why the crazy guy put the elephant gun in his baby's mouth? That's why. On the street where I lived, fiction stood small in the shadow of the truth. Real small. Itsy bitsy. It was a long weekend for everybody, that's what my neighbor said. And his name was BJ.
That wasn't really his name, was it?
Yeah, it was. Ben Clutter, BJ, was my neighbor. Brother. Yeah, no,
So, what city in Florida is this?
Technically, if you want to look up on the map, unincorporated North Dade County, but most people would call it Miami, Florida.
Miami, yeah, right. And so, what is an elephant gun? I have no idea.
It was just giant rifle. When the SWAT team had him in handcuffs and walked him out, it was some sort of like if you go on safari in Africa, wow. Something. Like, I guess now you could happily get over the internet by hitting like 9 buttons, but
so,
you know.
I'm not clear. Was he watching his daughter? He was pushing her in a stroller?
All I know is what he yelled in the window, and the entire neighborhood ran down the street, and the SWAT team arrived, and the word was he was holding his own baby daughter hostage with this gun. And someone at one point said we're talking over the walkie-talkies, someone yelling, he's got the gun on her, he's got the gun in her mouth. We were hearing that while we were hiding in the bushes watching. It was like a nightmare unfolding.
Yeah, it sure is.
And it was, again, it's weird. Other people, as I've told the story more, they go right to that gun. And to me, since it's so ingrained in my brain from being seven, I'm like, oh, it's just the elephant gun everyone on the block talked about. But everyone asks, I know.
That doesn't make any sense.
I know.
I mean, I don't know if you mean like a fast gun, and I definitely didn't go to the animal. I didn't think people killing, I don't know what they do in Africa or when, because I'm not,
in the Beatles song Bungalow Bill, he's like hunting elephants, and I guess maybe you have to use a particular gun to make that happen because they're such big animals.
You're not allowed to do that. Are you allowed to do that?
I hope not.
I don't know.
Again,
people probably do like on a certain, you know.
How do you kill a rhino if you're going to do it? I don't want to know.
I mean, I think there are places where those parks, you know, like those asshole Trump boys go to, where they go just to shoot animals that are essentially penned in.
It seems like to do it so they can take pictures to cause internet outrage.
And I guess there is, of course, the ivory trade that goes on, and so I guess the people are killing, they're poaching, aren't they?
And again, you never know what people have in their closets in their houses down your block. And that was another thing it showed me at a very early age. Like, they're supposed to be the Joneses down the block, and they're insane.
Yeah. So you only have one brother?
I have one older brother.
So would you say you grew up in like, it's like basically lower middle class outside Miami?
I'd say middle class. Middle class.
Yeah. Miami's an interesting place. So you were there in the 80s, of course.
I was there, right. When did I move? I drove out of town. I drove out of town in January of 1985. So I lived there for 20 years, the first 20 years of my life. And then I drove to Tallahassee to continue going to school at Florida State University.
So when you left Miami, was Coke a big thing at that point?
It was so weird. I, to anything like that, was much later in life. A lot of Catholic school, a lot of, not strict, but regimented in a good way, upbringing, you know?
So did you know of it around? I mean, I'm just trying to think about.
In my high school, I thought it was around me, but I thought weed was around me quicker.
I see.
But I knew the other was around me, and then when I went to FSU, when I moved to Atlanta for a few years, when I came back as like a mid-20s adult, I wasn't saying that I was doing it like a lot, but or anything, or barely even at all sometimes to qualify my own backstory, but I knew it was everywhere.
Yeah.
And yeah, so the answer is...
Because there was a point where it just seemed to permeate everything, and like there was so much smuggling going on, and there was so many, it seems...
There was a TV show about it. The Mighty Vice glamorized it to everyone, to the rest of the nation.
Maybe
so
that's what I'm thinking of.
You are thinking of
always,
that.
There always seemed like people that had drugs on boats, and also like
and
small
And then In
planes.
The Air Tonight by Phil Collins is playing in the background. We used to drive around in high school with that blasting.
Oh yeah, man.
But imagine recreating shots from the TV show while we're still living there, blasting it like high school friends, on I-95 through downtown. We feel like we're in the TV show, blasting.
You're untouchable.
And I have friends, and my business partners, both of them oddly specifically don't appreciate Phil Collins. And the thing is, it doesn't matter whether I do or I don't. I love that song because it just says, I'm driving across a beautiful causeway to Miami Beach and it's gorgeous. And I don't know what you're doing today. I'm doing this.
Because
I love
the music
Miami.
Does
I
that
love,
to me.
Oh, it takes me. It's a big part of just a lot like of my that. Monologues.
Yeah, just it like is. That music will go right to the heart of where I was or what I was doing. And that period of time reminds me of that movie Against All Odds. Remember Jeff Bridges movie?
Oh, sure.
I remember seeing that like 5 times. And, you know, of course, we were in the theater. So it was like 5 movie experiences with different people. I just thought it was so glamorous. And now I think of James Woods and what an asshole he is.
Oh, my God.
He couldn't be more of a horrible person.
And a cartoon character on A Family Guy? Isn't he?
I'm not sure.
I think so. Isn't he? They portray him.
I could see that.
I think. Yeah.
I could see that.
Yeah. It's not. There's like the James Woods back then and the now James Woods.
Yeah,
and there seems like almost different James Woods. But,
yeah,
you know,
and then there's like Chuck Woolery. Chuck Woolery's like that. Scott Baio.
Yeah.
Some crazy people, right?
Yes, 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 yeah.
Just funny because you think like, well, if they had this amount of success, especially on television in a celebrity way, they got to be pretty smart, right? And then you look at Tom Cruise as a Scientologist.
Well, smart is a subjective word, Christine. Yeah. I mean, they think they're awfully smart. We don't think they are, and that's why we have a difference of opinion. I mean, we're not looking. I mean, Tom Cruise is really smart to have built an empire, to associate himself with a questionable group. Well, that shows maybe not so smart in that department, but that's not for really for me to say. If it makes him happy, then, you know.
Oh, no. Are you a Scientologist?
No, It's just more that. It's never for me to wag a finger.
Well,
you know,
except for the
I don't dig it. I don't think it's right. But, you know, what am I going to do? You know.
Well, gosh darn, that seems surprising to me, especially as a Capricorn, because, you know, that's
I'm just
like,
trying to let people.
If they're mean,
I don't want them. I don't want to let them off the hook. But if they're not, you know,
I'm not saying you have
to
judge people. I'm not saying that. But would I prefer that these people don't prey on my daughter at some point?
Of course, you don't want anyone proselytizing.
I would prefer
anyone. I don't like a Catholic if they're proselytizing.
Me neither.
Anyone of any religion that proselytizes means you seem sort of lacking so much that you feel like you gotta put the word out. But so much of a heart of so much of that structure religion is go out and find other people to believe along with you,
mm-hmm.
and that gets icky because I'm not putting that's personal and I shouldn't be putting in someone else's face.
Yeah.
You know, to me, I mean,
yeah, I don't
look.
I, don't
I had 13 and a half years of Catholic university. I went to a year and a half of Catholic college before I transferred.
I went to a full on Catholic university.
Oh wow, that's amazing. Yeah, I went to Barry University, which was I loved my year and a half there. Great theater program, did some great work, but it was kind of emotionally kind of dragging me backwards because it was a closer walk to my house than my kindergarten. So it was like I was inching back closer to home, and I was like, I really love it. They do great plays at Barry, and they taught me how to work a 999-seat theater, and we did Agatha Christie, and what didn't we do? You know, I learned how to build puppets on a great year and a half there, but then I could walk home in 4 minutes, and I was back in my childhood bed, and I was like, no, we gotta go a little farther. So I went 8 hours north to Tallahassee.
Well, I went to Duquesne University, which is also a Catholic university in Pittsburgh for 4 years.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I hated it. I mean, I liked the being away on my own, but
I
the
can't
schooling,
imagine
I can't,
finishing.
I had
a college
to take
that was Catholic.
I had to take a Christian understanding of the human person.
Oh my God! I'm sorry. After
a marriage class taught by a priest.
You know, I had. That's brilliant.
And I also, one more thing, I got stoned though. There was one priest that he and I really got along and we would get stoned together.
Oh, that I would, Candy, that blows my mind even picturing myself.
Yeah, that worked out well.
My best friend's father used to teach, I'm going to tell this because it was still one of the funniest things, because you mentioned being taught by a priest of marriage class, because it's just my best friend's father used to teach, I think in Catholicism, it's still called the pre-Cana courses, which is the introduction to how to be married.
Yeah.
What is pretty much.
Yeah.
And my best friend's father used to teach it in their local parish.
Sure.
And he's such a brilliantly lovely man. I bet you people are to this day still blessed that they talk to my best friend's father as a couple. But this was his line that he said, him work in the room and he got all the couples on his side. So he'd talk about this part of marriage and we're getting into all the personal nuts and bolts that involve genitalia. And my best friend's father would say when he got to, and this is apparently how it would come out every time with the seminar, he'd go, as far as oral sex, well, it's a matter of taste. And that's all he would leave it. And that always made me giggle. That's how he would address it. It was a matter of taste. And he'd leave it as his double entendre for, I know, it was so corny. And that's the best he could utter. That's the best the Catholic could utter about it. It was, well, either you like it or you don't. We're going to move on.
Yeah.
And that just always made me giggle because I love his dad so
much. It's really funny. You crack me up. And by the way, I didn't mean to pass judgment about a priest getting stoned. I think everybody should.
I wish I'd gotten stoned with many a priest along the way.
At my university, he was associated with theater group, the theater group, the Red Maskers, and I was in the theater group. So we would go to rehearsal, and then we'd all get stoned afterward.
We'd have
a show, and then we'd all get stoned, or we'd go up to this rooftop above this bar we used to go to and get stoned. It was fun, man. Those were some good times.
I wish I know. I had an uncle who was a Franciscan brother. I had two aunts that were nuns. I'm mired in it. My mom, well, you said you're the youngest of six. My mom was the youngest of eight. So I know, imagine, and oh my gosh, even more so as I sit here and look, you know, across and it all. See, you're youngest of six from Philly. My mom, I mean, you're from Pittsburgh. My mom was the youngest of eight from Philly.
Yeah, interesting.
So just across the state and mired in Catholicism.
Yeah.
As I used to use the term early on, Catholic.
Well, it was all the Europeans, right? That came over.
A lot of Italians, there you go. And my English. Dad was all very Irish, very Irish, English, Scottish on that side. And again, both groups, very Catholic.
We got to wrap this up, but I wanted to ask you, because you've done how many one-man shows?
Well, it's like I've been working on the same one off and on Well, that's not true. I've done my own, which is, you know, Fuck Fiction. Everybody go to fckfiction.com and hopefully it'll be around here in town or in Miami sometime soon. But the other one, the first one I did, and the theater company that hired me to do it, saw me do my first monologues. The ones, even Game Day, this one I read now, it's called Game Day. They saw me do at a late night show for the very first time and said, hey, would you be interested in doing Wallace Shawn's The Fever, which is a 75-page book. It took me 4 months to memorize, all about pretty much the disparity of watching so many poor people have so little, and it's like privilege guilt.
So that's what it is.
And I memorized it, we did it, and it was a great run.
So you were playing the role of that guy, or were you playing just like the narrator?
He is that guy. It's in The Fever. He is the man who is so guilt-ridden about having privileged while traveling through South America that he gets so guilt-ridden, he gets so sick, he gets a fever and gets into a feverish dream and tells a 75-page story uncontrollably because he's so upset that he was born in Manhattan to privileged elites, and while he's in South America, people are eating garbage off the street. And he looks out the window, and it makes him sick to his stomach, and that's what I did for a 6-week run.
I think that's pretty interesting.
It was awesome. It was a very freeing. It was really hard to do that for the 75 pages, 90 minutes, like 4 nights a weekend. But I loved doing it when we did it. We had a lovely, great review, and people, and it introduced me to doing now what I'm doing with my own material. And that's what's, and the main experience I draw from, whether, you know, it had positives and negatives to it. I'm very glad I did it. But even in my most recent shows, I look back to that time in The Fever going, wow, you held the audience for 90 minutes talking about, you know, commodity fetishism and Marxism and stuff. But now you're going to tell about your seventh birthday instead.
Yeah, that's pretty fascinating. Yeah. Now, like I said, I have a solo show coming up at the Whitefire Theater. Do you have any words of advice for me? I mean, I've done the show like 7 times. It's not brand new.
I think now I've done Fuck Fiction. I've done it like 9 times, but some of the, you know, the pieces go back 30 years now.
Changes, and things change because it's art.
Oh, you always updated things. Things within stories have changed. People have passed away. You have to make little adjustments, how they kind of end up in your heart and mind within the body of the story. Cause the audience feels that they know. Cause I've recognized this about telling stories at different forums here and in Miami over the years is I find, all right, here, there's well, here's one solid answer to a very good question is tell it in the moment. Don't tell it in the past. Put the audience in the now. Like when I told Game Day, I wanted us there then. I try to avoid saying back then when it happened, back then when it happened. No, it's like, I walk down the street and I clap. It's like it's just that one change. Because then I don't think when you're an audience member, you're interested in hearing about something that happened 30 years ago, but you wouldn't mind watching it happen in front of you now. in the moment. I think the story becomes more active for the listener, viewer, watcher. There, that's one.
Keith, that is really good advice.
Now, I actually think, all right, and here's the other one you didn't ask about, because when people always say, hey, I'm doing sit and spin, or I'm doing tell it, or I'm doing, you know, any
story worthy.
I'm doing, well, story worthy, unless they come in with this is, it's specific to the page when you're reading in a forum. And they always go, so what's the good advice to do sit and spin really well? And I go, oh, that's a simple one. Since you're writing it, I have no input in what you're writing. So all I can tell you is this, two words, big font. Make it big so you're not struggling in front of the audience.
But don't you think it's better not to use a page at all?
Well, it depends on the forum. No, it depends on... I know these stories because I started memorizing them 30 years ago.
Right.
And then about 2 years ago, I started beating them into my head. So I know them pretty much forward and backwards. But, you know sit and spin. Some people read, some people memorize, and they never tell you. And I like that about them.
Yeah, because I've done it both ways.
So there's, again, like the religion thing, I don't judge. It's the forum.
No, I know. I understand.
And I'm not implying you are at all. It's just that because I'm always hyper aware of it. Oh, they're reading. Not in a negative way. It's, oh, this is something, obviously, they've told this story before so much that they know.
I like it both ways as well, actually, because
me
if
too.
People are reading from the page, they've put a lot of thought into where those words go and their pauses. It's very, very thought out. However, if they're just telling me, then I feel more like I'm with them, for sure. And I feel like we are more likely to get laughs together and stuff because I am more involved.
And because it is happening in the moment. I went back at one point and looked at one of the show tapes of Game Day, and I wanted to know what worked really well and what I could still improve even with us in telling the story again just now. And it was honestly letting myself react to people.
Yeah.
And I remember, I can tell you one that I didn't even remember from the show. And I remember the run very well, but I didn't realize till I went back and listened a few days ago when I said the Dallas went on to lose 26-3. And somebody in the audience went like, ugh, like that, like they suck. Yeah. You know, they had that. And I was so pleased
so
that
funny.
I laughed.
Yeah,
and I didn't
so
just
funny.
Stop like it threw, it was just like, well, that's what they should be doing, right?
Super funny.
Yeah, I was surprised and it made me smile.
It's so funny also. The other thing we have in common is because you grew up in a football town. I grew up in
Pittsburgh. Oh, big. Yinzers, right?
So the Dolphins and the Steelers. And so I have a story in my one-woman show that also is a football game.
Oh, man.
So crazy.
Because now I need to know, because one of my dearest, dearest friends who will now even more so listen to this podcast is a... insane
Steelers fan. Yeah.
Who came?
I probably know. Him.
he came from Cuba when he was 5,
oh,
and
wow.
Everyone asks, why aren't you a Dolphin fan? He goes, well, when I was learning and falling in love with football, they were the kings.
Yeah, them and the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah,
those were the two teams.
And then I find with Dolphin fans, the lifelong fans are more Marino fans.
Yeah,
because he's a Pittsburgh guy.
Yeah,
he went to University of Pittsburgh, and that's where his whole family and background is. And I was a season ticket holder for 9 years when he was playing, and I worshipped at his football.
Isn't that
I
funny?
Went to Canton with my best friend
to the football hall
for the enshrinement.
Wow! That's funny. All right, you guys, we do have to wrap it up, though. I want to thank Keith Blaney so much.
Well, thank
you. Guys can head over to fckfiction.com and find out more about him there, and then also head over to Twitter and follow me at Storyworthy and also at Storyworthy on Instagram. And listen, I would be remiss not to mention my new podcast, Screwed Up Stories, with comedian Rachel O'Brien. You guys can find us on Apple Podcasts. If you subscribe, I will be so happy. I can't even tell you. And then you listen wherever you listen to your audio. But subscribing on Apple Podcasts is very important. And you guys are going to love these Screwed Up Stories by some of the most fantastic female talents this country has to offer. I'm telling you, it is really fun. We also have a website, screwedupstories.com. And of course, you can follow us over on Instagram and Twitter there, at Screw Stories. All right, you guys, I want to give a big thanks to all the sponsors on the show today. Remember, you guys, when you support my sponsors, guess what? You support me!
Yes.
Hooray! And one more time, on behalf of the very talented Keith Blaney, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This was absolutely lovely.
Good. My name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com. I'll keep you safe.